Hello everyone and assalamu alaikum. This is Lisa. I'm a co-host of the Muslim Woman in Finance podcast. Today's episode is going to be a recording of a webinar we did last week with a nonprofit organization called Peaceful Families Project, also known as PFP, which is located in Northern Virginia. PFP is an international organization that works to end domestic violence in Muslim families and Muslim communities. They provide awareness workshops and training to individuals and organizations globally. I can't wait for you all to listen to our upcoming episode. There's a lot of gems and great information. Please enjoy.
So we are very excited to have you and to have our speakers here. I do want to say a minute about why this is so important. We are very aware of one of the risk factors for domestic violence is the inability for women to economically support themselves, to understand finances, to manage on their own. For us, it is critical for women to have the necessary skills for life if they are going to make good decisions about relationships and have the ability to create safety for themselves and their families and their children. So we know that in financial literacy, financial management, financial independence at some point is a critical life skills for all of our young women. So we are very excited to host this particular workshop during Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And I am going to do the introductions of our really amazing speakers. We are so lucky to have them. So we have Amira El Namara, and I'm sorry if I kill the names, who is the Director of Clinical Services and a nurse practitioner in a long-term care facility. She lives with her husband and two daughters, age 5 and 2, in southwestern Ontario, Canada. Amira is also the co-host of the podcast, Muslim Women in Finance. Her passion for personal finance is fueled from recognizing the gaps that exist between Muslim youth, particularly women, and her hope is to empower and educate individuals to take control of their personal finances and increase their financial literacy through lived experiences. Alhamdulillah, we are very happy to have you with us. We also have with us Lisha Hashim, who is an electrical engineer, patent examiner. She has conducted workshops and financial coaching sessions for Muslim women over several years. Lisa is the moderator of the Facebook group Muslim Women in Finance and a co-host of the podcast Muslim Women in Finance. She is currently pursuing a business certification in women's entrepreneurship at Cornell University. Masha'Allah, we are so excited to have these speakers with us. They are representative of everything that we want for Muslim women in our communities. And I will pass then the mic over to them and have them explain to us what we need to know about financial literacy as Muslim women.
Jazakallah khair, Dr. Denise, and thank you for the invite and the opportunity to come on and talk about personal finance and a very important topic, something we're definitely passionate about. And so we'll basically jump right in and discuss why it's important to know what personal finance is, and really just kind of a basic understanding of what personal finance is really it's an all-encompassing term. It's used to describe how we manage our money. And the five main areas of personal finance really includes income, budgeting or spending, saving, and investing. And why it's important, particularly for women, is really, you know, as you mentioned before, especially as a risk factor in domestic violence and independence for women on their own, you know, understanding your personal finances really allows you to direct your life, to create meaning and purpose for yourself rather than profits for others. Knowing where your funds are going allows you freedom to spend the money on things that are important to you and to kind of what you value. And money can really be a source of financial security and stability, which is something that we all strive for. Money at the end of the day is a tool, and that tool does give you choices. So, you know, whether that's spending time with your children or spending more time doing more charitable work, really that ball is in your court when we have more control over our finances. So inshallah, that really helps You know, that's our goal, is to try and help and encourage people to understand more why it's so important. We'll go into kind of talking about budgeting, because that's really, it's the very foundation of what personal finance is. It's that building block of what personal finance is. It's your spending plan, what goes in, comes out. And there are many different techniques and ways of doing this. And there's spreadsheets, you can do tracking your expenses through that way, through like an Excel, or there's multiple electronic apps that you can do, you know, that will sync across devices. So I'll just mention a few here just for individuals to kind of, we'll just kind of touch on the very tips on a lot of these topics. So Mint is a online app that you can use for budgeting. It's kind of one of the more forerunners in the online budgeting space. It can be used more like a tracking device. So really it kind of gives you an idea of where your money is going if you like the electronic feel to that. And there's Excel spreadsheets that you can just literally write everything down, track things that way. I did eventually migrate over to You Need a Budget, or YNAB for short, which does focus on assigning each dollar a job. And it does help you kind of account for goals and things like that. So it's a little more sophisticated in that sense. Another common one is Every Dollar. So that was also made popular by Dave Ramsey, who's a very famous personal finance guru, which they also have a free version. So those are some online tools. And then you can do some basic things in terms of setting up a budget, because that's really your foundation. But regardless of kind of which route you choose, here are some of the major categories you'll want to account for. So fixed expenses, that includes bills, rent, mortgage, utilities, phone, internet, insurance. These are things that you know you have to, these are your responsibilities on a monthly basis. Then there's true expenses. These are things that tend to come up, and don't really always account for this. This is kind of where we end up getting stuck in terms of where spending falls apart and our budget will fall apart. Things that come up on a regular basis, but not necessarily every month throughout the year. So like subscriptions, car maintenance, repairs, gas, household items, clothing, gifts, donations can be a part of these true expenses. A lot of times this category will be where you kind of really hone in on your expenses and kind of fine tune things. Then there's a savings category. So that'll include emergency savings. It's always a good idea to have set aside some income for emergency savings if, God forbid, you lose your income, source of income. Larger purchases, so you can do 3, 6, or 9 month intervals, things that are looking at that you're looking at to purchase in the future. And of course, retirement savings. And then an additional category you'll want to account for is debt repayment. And this will be if you have student loan repayments, consumer debt, any car loans, things of that nature. So I know that's kind of a lot of information all at once, but really, you know, budgeting is your foundation of understanding your personal finance. And ultimately, your budget does need to work for you. I know, you know, it's something that needs to be fluid and sustainable, right? Because then that way it's something that you can continue doing. And it's the most single important step in understanding where your money's going. And it can be labor intensive, but it's truly enlightening, because it allows you to kind of see where your money's going, and you can make a plan for it once you have that figured out. Once you have that foundation set up, you can see how much wiggle room you have after accounting for all sources of income. And I'll kind of let Lisa take the lead on that and share some tips surrounding income and what that looks like.
Thank you. So now that, you know, Amira had gone over budgeting, I'm going to discuss several moving parts and related to your income, what's coming in. But before we do that, I want to talk about goals, because goals are tied into what you do with your money. So there are short-term goals. An example would be paying off your credit card in 6 months. And then there are long-term goals. For example, going to Hajj in 8 years. I want to save for that goal. So the reason why the goal setting is so important is because, again, it's related to your financial portfolio, because that's how you're going to be able to pay for those action items. And it gives you an idea of what you're going to do with the money once you've amassed a certain amount, for example. So it's always good to have goals. They can change from time to time. Your family can even have a goal, for example, like a family vacation. So it's just nice to set aside some time to think about what things you want to do with the income that you have in. One misconception about income, though, is that a lot of people think that income is wealth, and actually income is not wealth. Wealth building is separate from what's coming into the household. And so most of the income is going to paying your home payment, your utilities, your bills, your savings. You may set aside some for retirement. And then whatever is left over, that is the chunk of cash that you're going to use to start the wealth building. So now that we know that, let's start off by determining the net worth. The net worth of each individual is their assets minus their liabilities, and that equals a number. And the secret sauce of net worth is that you want to limit the amount of liabilities and debt you have to increase your net worth. So some examples of liabilities are credit card debt, student loan debt. That's just something more and more people have, because more people are going to college and the college expenses are so high that they need to take on student loan debt. And after they graduate, start paying. So that actually is taken away from a lot of things, such as home ownership and even, unfortunately, getting married and having children. That has affected a lot of people and the decisions they're making. So some other liabilities are credit card debt, the mortgage payment, just excessive spending. So one of the goals of having high net worth, again, is to reduce the liabilities. So how do you reduce the liabilities? Well, after you do your budget and you understand, you know, what is coming in, which categories it's going into, how do you use whatever's left over to kind of start building the wealth? So after you examine what you have, there are different ways that you can increase your income. For example, the stock market, which I know is really popular now because it's in pop culture, it's in the news every day, having a savings account, buying good investments, like a rental property, for example, things of that nature, trying to eliminate, again, the liabilities. Another example of a liability I wanted to go back to is the car payment. A lot of people kind of get stuck in buying the latest and greatest car and then having that high car note. So that kind of takes away from your wealth building, the excess money that's left over to build your wealth. And I just want to remind, you know, everyone here that appearances are important, but sometimes they are taking away from how people can build their wealth, because everybody wants the latest and greatest in an instant, right? The latest technology, the latest fashion. Just again, as a reminder, you know, that can take away from building your net worth, and that can be something you can be mindful of when you're spending. How are some ways to increase income? If you have income coming in, for example, if you get a W-2 and you're working for a company, the easiest way is really to ask for a raise, or if you go on your next job interview, you know, ask for a fair or a higher salary than normal and see if the company will give you that. Other ways people are doing are the side hustle and the part-time job and versus the passive income. So the distinction between the two is that the side hustle and part-time job, you are trading your time for money. You actually have to go on the weekends to the coffee shop to work for the extra income. And that is different than passive income, where you could create a course, you could create some type of e-booklet, you know, something that you can create one time, put on the internet, and have that create passive income where you're always accumulating wealth in some capacity. So those are the two distinctions as far as those type of incomes are concerned. Now, what to do with the leftover income? You know, maybe in the beginning you have kind of, when you do your budget, you realize, okay, I have $100 left over. after all this, you know, after the home payment, after the utilities, after paying my credit card, you know, what do I do now? So that can definitely be something you put away in investing. One thing that a lot of financial experts talk about is that the stock market usually brings in about roughly 8% annually because of compounding. You know, the longer you leave the money in the stock market, it's going to grow over time. And the key to that is a long-term investing. But the problem becomes when you have credit card debt that has an interest rate of 18%. So what do you do? You have the credit card debt on one side, and then you have investing on the other side. A lot of the experts say try to attack that debt and get rid of it so that eventually you'll have more to invest in the future, because that 18% is much higher. That 18% negative, it's a negative for you because you're actually giving that away. It's much higher than the 8% you'd receive from the stock market. So it is a good idea to try to eliminate those debts as much as possible so that you are starting to see the profit come in. I want to talk a little bit about retirement because I think a lot of people don't really know why it's so important. We don't live in the time of having pensions. We live in the time of having either an employer-sponsored plan or having an individual retirement account. So especially for those sisters out there who do not work and has a spouse working, your spouse could actually open you a spousal IRA and contribute to that account so that during your retirement years, you have income. How do you know how to calculate, you know, how much do I need in retirement? It's based on what your living expenses now. So that's why the budget is important, because you can calculate right now how much you need for living. Maybe it's $3,000 a month, maybe it's $1,500 a month. And that is kind of what you're going to utilize to see how much you'll need in retirement. So if you have an employer-sponsored plan, you should at least contribute 1%. That's on the low end. Another benefit is you could contribute at least maybe 3-5% to get the employer match. And the goal with contributing to a retirement account is the 15%. That's a conservative goal, because that is going to, in 10, 20, 30 years, grow when you have a nest egg and that you can retire, because in retirement, you can't take loans for retirement. And in your 70s and 80s, you can't really go to a bank and say, hey, you know, I need money to live now, I'm not working anymore. They're not going to give you a loan. And that's why for sisters, especially, retirement is an important consideration. I would say priority over the education savings for your children. You need to have that set up as soon as possible, because what is going to happen with Social Security in the United States, there's a big question mark. We don't know. We don't know if we'll have the same amount of money and access to it in the future.
Salam, fellow sisters. My name is Rizwana, and I'm an investment advisor with Sharia Portfolio, a halal wealth management company. It's exciting to see so many of you here growing and improving your knowledge of personal finance. At Sharia Portfolio, we help many individuals like yourselves to become prudent investors in a Sharia compliant and ethical manner. I'd love to have a conversation with you to learn about your goals and explore options that suit your needs. So don't hesitate, give me a call at 510-684-5196 or visit ShariaPortfolio.com to learn more. Remember, you don't need to compromise your values, because there is a halal way to invest.
So I want to pass it back to Amira. Did you have any comments on what I just said?
No, I think you touched on a lot of really good points there, particularly retirement savings and the importance of that, right? You touched on the savings for education and how, you know, women, of course, we worry about our children and their well-being. And that's a big part of our spending, even in the now. And, you know, a big major expense that takes up a large chunk of your monthly expenses will be childcare, particularly for women who are in the workforce. You know, the cost of childcare is increasingly getting more attention in the media, and we see the cost of living increase. And this in turn is pushing more women to work outside of the home who may not have had in the past. So I'll just kind of highlight some tips on how we can seek out alternatives, and particularly for those without family nearby for childcare. You know, family is a great way, is a great alternative, but I would always, always have a plan B, because particularly if you've not had that conversation with those family members, you don't want to assume that that's going to be part of family planning and things like that. So they may not be in a position to watch your children, whether that's due to health and or their own livelihoods and or income. So the big thing really, you know, especially even in Canada where I live, and it's the same for the US, I grew up in the States, so I understand both systems, but taxpayer dollars do get funneled into social programs like the YMCA, there's Boys and Girls Clubs, there's recreation centers, libraries. You know, Lisa and I were talking about how great the library is a resource for individuals because it's free, and there's so, it's just a wealth of knowledge. You know, I think we've gone away from a little bit from utilizing libraries simply because of the technology use and increase of Google and all this, these things, but the libraries are definitely still there and it's still a good resource. So that can always be your first step to kind of look for, you can always ask and inquire about additional programming they may have, activities, even subsidies to help offset the cost of childcare. The second one is your local massages and communities. It's also an option because especially if your community offers childcare, sometimes they'll have discounted tuition and tuition fees. Generally, that's made possible by donors in the community. You know, not necessarily some, it depends on the how they're built, but some of them might be subsidized if they're licensed childcare. But again, you won't know if you don't ask. So always ask about these programs, whether that's at your local masjid or whether that's the library or the YMCA. They often offer discounted memberships, and that will also give you access to childcare. So you can include activities for yourself. So that includes fitness programs and things like that. So yeah, you definitely, you know, the library is a great resource to start. And if you're not sure of where to go next, always start there. So in terms of, you know, looking at these different expenses, you've created that budget, you've got money coming in, you're able to optimize the amount of money that you're spending. And then, like you said, Lisa, you have that extra money at the end of the month, you've taken care of your, you know, maybe you've put a little towards retirement savings, you've knocked down some debt. We'll talk a little bit about what you can do for savings for children. So Lisa will kind of shed some light on that and what options you have if you have that availability in your budget.
Before I move on to that, I want to just mention, you know, different ways to save. You know, why would I save? What are some examples of savings accounts that I would create for myself? So when you're doing your budget, you could have, for example, the retirement bucket, and hopefully you won't miss that too much because that will be automatically deducted from your paycheck if you're working for a company. Another bucket you could have is saving for a down payment on a home. It is suggested between 15 to 20% of a home purchase should be saved for down payment purposes. And don't forget, you know, there are closing costs involved too. Another suggestion as a bucket for savings would be for, of course, an education fund for the child. But also, you know, if you want to start a business, or again, if you want to attack those, you know, maybe you want to give $25 extra to your credit card. The thing with the credit card is that you want to pay it off monthly in full. That's how you're going to beat, you know, never being charged interest. And then also an emergency fund, because life happens, right? Life happens, you know, the roof might leak, the car may break down. That is suggested to be at least 3 to 6 months of your expenses. And also if you have, for example, a job loss, some people saw that during the pandemic, they may have been laid off. So that is just another bucket to have for security reasons. So the checking account and the savings account need to be separate. And, you know, some employers can actually direct deposit into two or more accounts for you. So the savings can grow without any intervention, which is great. But again, for the emergency fund or the savings fund, you don't want to touch it, especially emergency. That should only be for emergencies only, and not because, you know, I need $5 more at Target, things of that nature. To move on to the child education savings. Like I said earlier, you know, you can't borrow for retirement. So what are some things you can do for your children if you have the extra income? Well, as soon as they're born and they have a Social Security number assigned to them, several savings accounts can be saved for them. I do want to mention that you can save before they're even born in an account as well. But the common education saving vehicles in the United States are the Coverdell Education Savings Account, the UTMA or UGMA, it's the Universal Transfer MINA account. And those two savings vehicles, there's actually Sharia compliant investments that you could use with those two. Now, the 529 savings accounts, which are the state sponsored, a lot of scholars say that those investments are not Sharia compliant. So if you do have one, you really need to log in to the brokerage account and see where that money is going into, because the states have a lot of say in how they're investing those. So those are some options for individuals, for their children. Their children can graduate high school early. They can take AP classes where the cost of the class would be much less than in college. They can go to the community college and then transfer to a public state university, and also try to maybe graduate early, because tuition costs and college expenses increase every year. We've been seeing that over the years. Your child can start working early. You know, it depends on what state you're in. 15 or 16 years old, they can work part-time. Some suggestions could be tutoring, babysitting, or retail, for example. And so I would also suggest for parents to go into the high school counselor's office or whoever is managing the college applications for juniors and seniors. You really need to be on a first name basis with that office, because they may be sitting on a lot of local scholarships that they're not really telling anyone because nobody's interested. So you would start with the local high school scholarships, see what's available at the local school, the local district or county, local state. Then there's federal scholarships and also private scholarships. FAFSA is definitely something you want to utilize, F-A-F-S-A, for federal aid. And you should apply, you should fill out that application every year to see what you are eligible for. The colleges as well, you need to be on a first name basis with the financial aid office and the career counseling office. Parents can get involved as well. There are many internships. There are they can critique your resume to see if you can get a better job if you're a student there. They may have some financial aid that came in because of the pandemic, federal aid, that no one is accessing. So those are really good places to start. When the child and parent walk in the office, that shows seriousness. It shows that you care. And that's why I really do suggest, you know, the parents always keeping in contact with those offices. Did you want to add anything, Amira?
No, I really like that you brought up the resources and using financial aid, because there's so much untapped resources out there in terms of college funding. That sometimes it's not publicized enough, and or we're not looking for it. Again, always do your research regarding anything that you're looking after, especially when it comes to your own finances, because there's a lot of wealth of information out there.
Okay, and we do have a question in the chat, and I will pass that on to you. So what is your opinion of high yield savings accounts?
Okay, so I'm just going to kind of give you a little background about that, because a lot of scholars do say that, you know, interest is high. And so those high yield savings accounts, especially the ones online, because I won't name them, but because they don't have a brick and mortar store, so they can give you more of the interest back instead of the conventional bank down the street. Yeah, definitely from an Islamic perspective, from what I've studied, they're not permissible. But I'm just going to jump ahead a little bit. So this, I don't know if you can see this. I have this book here. Can you see this book? Oh no, I guess you can't see it. Can you see that?
It keeps blending into your background, Lisa.
Okay, so I'm gonna write up. Okay, so A Muslim's Guide to Investing in Personal Finance by Brother Monim Salam. Everybody needs to get that book to understand why, you know, we can't use riba, but yet IOFI, which is an accounting organization, it's a global Islamic organization. They have pointed out how investing in the stock market is halal as long as it follows steps of Sharia compliancy. There's a couple steps it has to follow. For example, it can't be investing in stock that deals with warfare, alcohol, pornography, things of that nature. So I would suggest getting this book, A Muslim's Guide to Investing in Personal Finance. And because you can't use those high yield savings accounts, then therefore you can go ahead and invest in the stock market. You know, there are Sharia compliant products out there and they're doing really well. I won't name them, you can Google them, but they're doing really well. And so you can put your money in those investment vehicles and you'll be well on your way. And thank you, the sister, for putting the link to the book. I'm so sorry, it's blending in with my background. I cannot show it. But that is kind of the holy grail, if you will, for investing. Brother Monim does a really good job to explain why Muslims can invest in the stock market and other ways, you know, real estate, things like that, of putting in your savings.
And it looks like there's another question here regarding recommendations on halal investing courses from Zajiba. And, you know, I think a big myth or we're kind of intimidated by investing simply because there's a lot of it, right? And we don't know everything. And my suggestion actually would be to look at seek out Sharia portfolio or seek out Sharia compliant investment groups and firms that can kind of handle these things for you. Because we can't know everything, and I would not recommend to stock pick and do that kind of thing for individuals that are simply just entering into the market, index funds, things like that are Sharia compliant are probably going to be your set it and forget it, and you can automate that. So that would be my suggestion. Always seek out financial advice from professionals that way. It would be good information to know. I don't have any recommendations as far as investing courses. I don't know if Lisa, you've come across any. I'm kind of lazy that way. I just have everything on automatic.
You know, I mean, there are plenty online for the average individual. So what I would suggest is the book I just mentioned by Brother Monim Salam. Pick up that book. And if you could take any investment course, go ahead, you know, read a book by Warren Buffett. He's probably the most famous investor in modern time and kind of understand, you know, how this works. And then, you know, again, there are Sharia compliant brokerages. I'll just name three. There's Sharia Portfolio. There's Amana Mutual Funds, which is managed by Saturna. And then there's Wahid Investing. And so you can actually work with a representative from those companies to have a Sharia compliant investment vehicle for yourself. And that it would include education, that would include retirement, that could include a health savings plan. And that way you're not going about it on your own. So that is just my suggestion. Amira, do you see any other questions?
I think we covered the two, unless Sister Denise, you saw any other.
And no, those were the two that I saw at the moment.
Okay, I just wanted to finish up our talk and then we can do more Q&A. I just had a couple more things to say because I really want this to benefit the sisters that are on. You know, one more about income growth. You know, you really need to tweak your resume, use those keywords that are related to the job search the occupation or job title that you're looking for, go on salary.com, go on glassdoor.com, go on indeed.com, look at the salaries, the job that you're interested in, and the location. Okay. Salaries also are influenced by the location that you live in. And then you have an idea of what you can make. And so on your next job interview, you could ask for 5,000 more than what the average is. You should always ask for more. Everything's negotiable. Usually there will be a back and forth if you're a good candidate, but I would suggest always asking for more because that is a benefit for you. And also to examine the key words that are in your field or your career so that that can be highlighted on your resume. And always read the job description so that can be reflected back in your resume and cover letter. And then I just wanted to share a couple more books for our sisters. I think it's very important, especially for women, to have a personal library in your home. You know, you can definitely go to the public library, but having reference books in your home to help you with your financial journey is really important. I already named one. There's another book called Five Pillars of Prosperity by Dr. Yacoub Mirza. You need this book. It'll help you with budgeting. It'll help you with financial plan for your life. So definitely get that. Again, that's Five Pillars of Prosperity by Dr. Yacoub Mirza, who I actually learned from as well, and who is the architect of Amana Mutual Funds. There's another book that just got on the market, and it's on Amazon. And I actually know the author. Her name is Sister Basila Muhammad. And her book is called Rebuild, Money Management for Single Moms. This is a Muslim woman who wrote a book for single mothers and how to budget, how to get out. She was actually a little bit of a compulsive shopper. So she talks about how her credit got ruined and how she rebuilt that. So definitely get that book. And another book, my favorite, Legally Savvy, S-A-V-V-Y, by attorney Zarina Nadir. It's also on Amazon because a lot of people don't understand how the law works in the United States, and law is related to finance, because when you get that speeding ticket, you have to pay for it. And if you don't pay for it, you're charged a lot of fees, right? She goes really in, she gives really good nuggets for, you know, immigration, family law, divorce, estate planning, wills, dealing with police. This is from an attorney, and this is for everybody. It's not just for Muslims only, but it's written by a Muslim woman. And I think it's very important to have this book, again, Legally Savvy. They sell it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. The author is Zarina Nadir. So I wanted to just highlight that. And the last thing I want to say, because it's Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and I do want to thank you for inviting us. I want to talk about two really common things that happen in families that are related to domestic violence. When we say domestic violence, a lot of people think we mean physical abuse only. Did you get hit? And you know, that's not the case. That's not the only way that someone can abuse you. There's verbal abuse, spiritual abuse. There's also financial abuse. And I want to share that with you because I want to give examples of what financial abuse looks like. I am going to speak from the perspective of a woman because most victims in domestic violence are women statistically, but I do want to acknowledge that there are men who can be victims as well. Financial abuse deals with preventing women or preventing the victim from having access to any monetary, like any money, basically. You know, you, for example, in a household where the husband is earning and the wife does not get a W-2 outside the home, she's not employed outside the home, he may think that it's his right to keep all the money and to spend it his way and not take her into consideration into the decision-making, and also prevent her access from money, prevent her access from healthcare. Oh, we can't afford that. We can't afford to see your family. We can't afford that that dental procedure that you need on yourself. We can't afford things. No, you can't do that. I make the money. That kind of talk. And, you know, financial abuse in the home there may not be physical abuse or spiritual abuse or verbal abuse, but those are telltale signs of financial abuse, and that needs to be resolved. So I do want people to know that that can be a sign of abuse. The other category I want to talk about is financial infidelity. That is under the umbrella of financial abuse, but that deals more with lying, cheating, and stealing, and making sure that the other person in the household does not know what they're doing. An example could be gambling. And because of the advent of technology, you know, gambling has become very easy to do. And, you know, opening accounts without the other person's knowledge, things of that nature. So what happens is it eventually comes out because there's no money to pay the bills. There's no money to buy food. There's like no money and you're in the negative now. So I think it's really important. I don't think it's talked about enough. And, you know, now we're here on this platform that we can share that information. I want people to be aware of that. And, you know, back in my day when I was taking, you know, marriage prep classes, it was always said that the man is the emir of the household. The husband is the emir of the household. Translation, he is a leader. If that's his responsibility, then he also needs to be mindful of who he is taking care of, and also be generous to be the best leader that he can be. So just because someone doesn't work in the house does not mean that they should be, you know, should not have any income for them. We really advise, you know, both spouses to have a joint account as well as a separate account where they can do their own spending without, you know, being micromanaged. And inshallah, it'll be in a good way, like having a hobby, like, you know, the brother likes to buy a lot of video games. And the sister, she likes to, you know, get her nails done once in a while, you know, it's not just being micromanaged. It's just healthy. It's an allowance that's healthy for both individuals to go about their way. So I did want to make those points before we move on to the Q&A. Amira, did you want to see if there's any other questions?
It looks like there's a lot more interest in the books that you had mentioned. So I wasn't able to get a good link for that book by Basila. So I did just share the title so that individuals can search that. And
can I spell out her name? It's Basila, Basila Muhammad,
yep.
Guise, Guisse.
And it looks like we have
the someone found it. Okay, yes, great. Yes, thank you guys. Yes. That's amazing. Thank you for being interactive with us. And it's an amazing book. It's in two parts, part one and part two. And there's a lot of activities and a lot of her story, which I think is really important to hear.
There was a question regarding calculating and paying zakah. There was a link in terms of for a zakah calculating, but I know there are different opinions and there are many different ways to do that. You know, that can be part of your planning, your budget, your, you know, when you do find out that amount, you know, whether or not you pay, always build that in. I would put that in as like a monthly expense. You know, that way when it's due time, you can pay for it all at once or however you prefer as a family. So that was my only advice, is to just always plan for it once you decide how your calculations end up being.
You can include your children in your financial planning. You guys, you know, all together as a family, you can pick a charity to donate to. You can change that every month. You can have your children help you grocery shop, you know, give them those tools that they can build on so they remember, and that they are learning also how to be financially savvy and have that financial literacy in the home.
Okay. And there is a question about entrepreneurship resources for stay-at-home women, if you can address that.
In the United States, we have something called the Small Business Administration, the SBA. I would definitely go to their page, sba.gov. There's so much information on how to become an entrepreneur, lots of videos. There's a lot of resources for women of color to also become entrepreneurs. You have a local chamber of commerce and a local SBA, usually in each county. and they have mentorships for free. So you can actually set up an appointment online. And it, I think it's called SCORE Mentorship, S-C-O-R-E. And you can, you know, you can get a free mentor from your local community that can help you. You know, if you want to have a brick and mortar store, if you want to have an online business, I'm currently taking entrepreneurship classes. And so the social media presence is a must for that, you know, setting up online payments, coming up with an idea, coming up with funding, even as far as, you know, trademarks and copyrights, and also setting up an LLC or S-Corp. So I know these are kind of heavy words here, but those are the key buzzwords for entrepreneurship. You can start small in your local community if you want to cater on the weekends for other families. If you're a great and awesome chef in the kitchen and you want to do that for your local community, I mean, that's a good way to start. Childcare services, Arabic language tutoring. I feel like every community is looking for someone for that. And now a lot of people do want their children home virtually for whatever reason. So those are really great ways to start. All of us have unique skills. We just need to write them down and figure out which would be the best to start our own business. You can go in partnership with another fellow sister. There are so many great ideas out there. Again, sba.gov. I would really look on there for the free resources. They have virtual conferences all the time. They get really renowned speakers to come as well because it is part of the federal government. And there are grants for women of color to apply for to start their business, to continue their business. So I think that's definitely a great resource.
Okay, I'm looking. I don't see any other burning questions. Do you guys have some last comments? And then we will, because we only have a few more minutes anyway, we will talk about Domestic Violence Awareness Month, what PFP has going on, and close out.
Before Amira, before you share how to reach us,
sure.
I know in my discussions with Sister Denise regarding, you know, contracts. And that's why I shared the book Legally Savvy, because we do need to be careful of signing contracts that we do not understand or we don't even know what language it's in. You know, most people don't carry around the magnifying glass to look at the terms and conditions of every contract. And I know of people who had their identity stolen by their own family members to open credit cards. I know people who co-signed on cars and it became a disastrous event. They co-signed for their friend and then their friend decided to return the car and the warranty period was over and then everybody's in a bind. You know, you have to hire a lawyer. So I would really be careful in what you're signing. You know, marriage or partnerships require open communication. Know what you're getting into. Be very vigilant about those things. Mira, did you want to share how to reach out to us?
Yes, I can do that, inshallah. So so you can find us on Instagram. Lisa does a really good job at staying active on there, Muslim Women in Finance. And we're also on Facebook, Muslim Women in Finance. We have a Facebook page. There's also a private group that you can request access to. And we do screen individuals coming in there. And of course, so we are co-hosts for the podcast, Muslim Women in Finance, on, and you can find that anywhere that you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or any of those. And then for specific questions or inquiries, MuslimWomenInFinance@gmail.com.
Thank you so much. I am so grateful to both Sister Lisa and Sister Amira for their not only information that they share tonight, but their ongoing dedication to the well-being of Muslim women and financial literacy and capabilities. It is something that is so needed, not only for sort of personal advancement, but really for safety of women in our community. So we are so grateful to have them available, not only here with us, but also in the community. So thank you so much. We ask for all of the blessings on your work, your lives, and your futures in finance.
We want to take this opportunity to thank each and every one of you for taking the time out of your day to listen to our show. Feel free to reach out to us at MuslimWomenInFinance@gmail.com with any thoughts, comments, feedback, or questions. We would love to hear from you. And you can also find us on Instagram at hashed.fine, F-I-N, and at Amira E, and join the Facebook group Muslim Women and Finance. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave us a rating and review. Thank you.